again we gather around ye old microphones. It's Swing Thoughts. That's the name of our show, episode 269. Yeah, I know. I'm Golf Spiritual Leader, simply because I've decided to say that for no real good reason, other than I have decided I've ascended to this lofty perch. And with me, a legit coach of and a good friend, I will say. A good friend to myself and others. He is a fine lad, Timothy O'Connor.
Despite his mistakes.
No, hey, a little foreshadowing. Apparently last week when I screwed up was just part of a trend here at Swing Thoughts. And we'll get to all that. Welcome, everybody. Hope you've had a great golf season. This is our last show. Don't panic. Not ever. This is just our last show of the 2024 regular season. For you people that are new, the Masters weekend until Labor Day, we go every week. And then after that, usually every couple of weeks, depending on schedules. And so we're happy to have you along with us as we can talk a little bit about, you know, the big tour championship that's coming up. And then, of course, the President's Cup and all that sort of stuff. Okay. But first, let's thank some of our sponsors, of course, Tim. We would be remiss if we didn't shout out to our friends at TaylorMade.
Every driver has an inertia number. The higher the number, the more forgiving the driver. Now, golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. The all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long, straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
Yeah, the QI10. Plus, I think I saw it up close a couple days ago. The new TaylorMade, that ball with the lines on it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's widely available now, the TP5X. And I saw somebody putting with it on Sunday. It looks really, really cool. Of course, our garments, well, not the one I'm wearing, but our garments today, these days, are brought to us by who?
By the fine folks who put together the Oscar Bravo Polo. They are the finest golf polo you could ever wear. Distinctive, amazing features. You look great. You feel great. Check them out at whoisoscarbravo.com. And just before we move off the sponsor portion of the show, I will say that the aforementioned scramble that I played in, which we shot 56, like, I'm a 67-year-old fella, and we're playing Rockaway, shorter par fours. I tell you, I was hitting that QI10 beautifully.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to have like a 320-yard hole, and then my next shot is like a chip shot or something. I mean, really.
And by the way, when you say aforementioned scramble, you mean from last week?
Yes.
you mean from last week's show? You know, this is actually great, because like when we started this show, you were a man in your mid-50s, and I was just a mere child of 50.
Short pants.
I had a little hat with a bonnet or whatever, a little short pants and a... Anyway, the point is, when you said aforementioned, you mean from 7 days ago.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Last week, I screwed up and didn't record the secret episode 268, the lost episode of Swing Thoughts. That might have been our best episode ever. Anyway, a few minutes ago, we're sitting around waiting for this week's guest, and we're all excited to... TJ Attlee, I believe, is her name.
Yes.
And she's a coach, and we're going to talk about her whole thing about zone golf. And Tim and I usually join the meeting a little bit before to discuss the issues of the day. And then at 10 a.m. Eastern, we record. Tim?
And... we're kind of like, okay, TJ should be joining us any minute now. So send her a text. Good morning. Are you joining us on the show? Do you need the Zoom link resent? And I went, maybe it's better double check that email I sent confirming the time. And then I notice The date is August 31st.
No, and hang on a second there, Skippy. First you said, oh no, this, you were, because I heard, you were saying this to me. You said, okay, email 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. So I was like, okay, confirm the right time. And then it was a few seconds later then when you revealed, yes.
Yeah, I set this up for the 31st. Not, and today's the 28th, and we never record on an effing Saturday, so screwed up.
And that's what I said. Like early on in the yearly days of the podcast, we did record on Saturdays. In fact, early on, you would come all the way to Toronto to the studio.
Oh, in Etobicoke.
In Etobicoke, the original Humble and Fred Studios, the big one, and we would record in person. And then it was at your suggestion we started using Skype. And as I've mentioned many, many times, you were the first person, long before we did it on the Humble and Fred show, you and I were doing Zoom recordings together for Swing Thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And here we are, this many years later. Now we're gnarled and gray.
Oh, yeah.
And our brains are decaying. Well, at least mine is.
No. Listen, the thing I did last week that ruined the recording, I'd never done that before. And I've done some things. So now 2 weeks in a row, it's just two old golf, wizened golf gurus fumbling through another episode. So we will have TJ Attlee on at another time.
Oh, yeah. What were we talking about?
I have no idea. Anyway, there's been quite a bit of... there's one email I saw. I can't remember if you sent it to me or somebody... No, not just that one. It was the one about iron covers.
Oh, yeah. We covered that.
Yeah, but somebody else sent me one.
Oh, someone else?
Yeah.
Oh, the controversy has not died?
Well, I won't be able to play it, but I can describe it. And I think it's something like, I want to get this right. It's a bunch of men at a pool party. Just, you know, just guys enjoying themselves.
Having had many beers.
But these aren't necessarily golfers. These are just, I'll just say they're men enjoying themselves at a party. And the joke apparently is, I'm trying to find it, is these are the guys who have iron covers on. So
do they have a little secret society or something?
Oh, yeah, here it is. This was sent to me by John Board. It says, and again, I'm just describing it. It's just a bunch of men who enjoy men's company. Let me just put it that way. Anyways, this is and the headline is pool party for guys that use iron covers. So it's not me. It's not me. I'm Howard GSL is not saying that. I'm sure there are a lot of men who aren't men who like men. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That use iron covers, but in this particular case, it made me laugh. It was just a bunch of guys, and the camera pans this entire pool party, and it just says pool party for guys who use iron covers. So, thank you, John Board, for that.
Yeah.
Do you want to summarize the Ripley? This is an email from Chris Ripley, and he's responding to Tim's article on Mazin Cassis, which we talked about extensively last week, about how to crazily enough how to enjoy golf, like, and just play like it's a game.
Yeah, the novel concept, golf can be fun.
Ooh. Yeah,
who knew?
So do you have the email in front of you?
I don't, but I can summarize it. So Chris sent me a note saying he liked the article. Thank you, Chris. And then he related to it, and then he spelled out kind of his day. And I think it's on Wednesdays or something. He plays with a group of guys. They throw money in, and you know he likes to play well. Chris is a good player, but his day didn't start off so well because he went downstairs to get his water bottle out of the freezer, and everything in the freezer was thawed out. like if for some reason they lost electricity. So he and his wife are fixing it. And of course, he's going to be late. And his wife says, oh, just go, just go. So he goes to the golf course. He can't do his normal warm up thing. And he's just thinking, oh, this day's going to suck. And anyways, he's four over after, I think it's 12 holes. He makes a triple, and then he makes a bogey. And he thinks, okay, here we go, into the dumper. But he pars in for, I think it was either 74 or 76.
Yeah, I got it now. I found it. It's, I think, 76, yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, the point of the thing is, he says, you know what? I came in with zero expectations.
Yeah.
It was just, let's have some fun with my buddies. And lo and behold, look what happens. And I just responded to him, hey, you know, thanks very much for the good word. But isn't it interesting what happens when we're not fixated on our score and I got to play well today? And I use the line that I've used many times is the man with no expectations is never disappointed.
I love that. I love the way he ends it. Says, reading this article today makes you realize how much fun golf can be if you allow it to be. And I'm not. Yep. And I would say that, you know, he describes it perfectly, saying that, you know, after he had a couple of little hiccups there, he said, I stood on the 12th tee and told myself, if I knew when we teed off today, I'm summarizing, you can go directly to the 12th tee and you're four over because, you know, he made a triple and a bogey. Anyway, he said, would you have taken it? Which is a great reminder to us, especially if we're having a pretty good round. You know, we all know when we're playing well and all of a sudden there's some couple of chaos holes where you make a double or a triple. And then all of a sudden you've got six holes to go. And I love what he said. If you could have put yourself in that situation, whatever that is, you're five or six holes to go and you're only four over for the day, you take it in a heartbeat. Most people would. And so that attitude led to him sort of being more grounded and more present and had his, it was his best. He said, I proceeded to shoot my best round of the season.
Yep. Yeah. And what I love about that is how it's so often things like that come unexpectedly. It's like you were talking, I think it was last week, about when someone breaks a scoring barrier. It's often that they won't break it, say, by one stroke. They'll often break it by five.
Yeah.
Because they don't even realize kind of what's going on, or they've just sort of stepped into a new experience. And for most golfers, and I was this all the time, I had to be at the golf course at least an hour ahead, had to go through my routine, almost mathematically hit this many wedges, eight irons, work my way up, and then chip and putt. Always had to go through that. And I would just usually get myself in some kind of lather about, oh, this is the swing thought for the day. Got to do this, got to do that. And then, you know, five over after two holes.
Not that there's anything wrong with, you know, getting there. I mean, you just described, you know, like I'm playing a tournament tomorrow. And that's more like my tournament warm up. And I say the word warm up as opposed to getting there. What you're describing, that's what made me laugh, is the lather we get into.
Yes.
Because I used to go to the golf course to try and find my swing every day. And not that I don't have, as I was saying to you before the show, like there's very few rounds of golf where I'm not either working on something or some key that has been working for me. But I'm not going to the range. My older brother is a bit guilty of this. He likes to get there early because he's hoping to find it each day.
Yeah.
Yep. And again, I love the guy, but he can get definitely worked up. And I've said to him, like, you have to have some trust and confidence that you've been doing this long enough. And he has a nice motion. He hits the ball very, very well. You know, he's a big guy, 72 years old. He can still roast it out there. But I think a lot of us can relate to that idea of, you know, going to the golf course early enough so that you hope to remember either some of the things that worked last time you played, which is death, or something you saw on Instagram or YouTube and hoping to put it into play that day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the mindset of, okay, I'm going to do this right today. I'm going to look at my notes or Some people look at the video of themselves or whatever. And today's the day I'm going to put this all into practice. And of course, as GSL said many times, nothing bad's going to happen today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have my breakthrough because I'm doing everything right. And that mindset just leads to tension, expectation, and we're just setting ourselves up for the fail, as you mentioned last week. I love that idea of can we play a different game that's not based on pass or fail, but maybe how does it just unfold and how's this story tell itself today?
Yeah, I was talking about this friend of mine who was playing in a club championship for the first time. Yeah, and the phrase he used was, "Oh, I hope to go into a competition to test my nerve." And when I say, "Well, that's a tough one to, you know, because what if you fail? What if the first time you hit a bad shot, you're like, well, now I have failed to test my nerve." The reason I laugh when I say, you know, people go to a golf course hoping to recreate the magic of the last time they played. And I've been doing that joke about how somebody will tell me, if I'm playing with somebody on a Saturday, they'll say, "Man, you know, Wednesday, men's night, I was hitting my driver so well." And I always joke and I go, "You know, Wednesday in golf was a long time ago." And now Titleist, Nance voices it. It's the one commercial where he talks about, you know, you're hitting your driver great. Your irons are on point. You've hit a lot. He describes a great round of golf and he goes, "But that was yesterday." And I'm like, yeah, that's the idea, is that all those great things can happen, but today's another day. And every time you play, it's hard to get our heads around it. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I you want whatever that magic was to just always be there, but it's not.
No, nope.
Because your body feels different every day. Mine does. I'm an old man. I am.
And we forget shit.
Exactly. I'm so nervous now. I just keep looking down at our production board, going, "Okay, is everything on? Is it recording? Am I just talking? Or is this just me and Tim yelling into the void?"
Yeah, this reminds me of Woody Allen, Annie Hall, when they go out to Paul Simon's place in L.A. and they go past, and there's Jeff Goldblum on the phone, and he's talking to his guru. He says, "I forgot my mantra."
Oh, that's really funny.
I think that happens to golfers all the time.
Oh yeah,
you know, we got the, what the hell was the swing thought I was working
absolutely
on? Damn it, what the hell was it?
I've done it. I've stood over a golf ball, both on the range and on the golf course, and just momentarily blanked as to what was I intending to do. I had no idea.
No, what's my elbow supposed to do?
So, anyway, thanks to Chris Ripley and John. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us. You know, I don't know that we've ever... I mean, you can email me. It's humblehoward@gmail.com.
Tim@o'connorgolf.ca.
Yeah, I mentioned your email. I don't care if people email me. Or you can also get a hold of the show through our Humble and Fred email, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com.
Facebook. We have a Facebook page, which we... don't pay enough attention to.
No, we gave up. We gave up a long time ago. We did. We gave up.
There's no give up. Come on.
Really, seriously, if we were going to be a social media juggernaut, we would have done it 9 years ago.
We didn't give up. It's just plain old negligence.
Okay, call it what you will. So I was very lucky. We can sort of build this story softly. I was very lucky, as were you, to have gotten to know the great Ben Kern. You wrote a book with Ben. Ben was a bit of a... I looked up to him a lot. I wouldn't say mentor, but I mean, he was definitely somebody that I hung around with and absorbed as much as I could. To put Ben in perspective, I think we touched on this briefly, that Ben kept his tour card when only 60 players did in the 1970s before the... You know, it was actually Gary McCord that was on the tour board at the time that got 125 guys exempt. But before that, you know... you had to earn enough money, and Ben was one of those 60 guys. And so that's how good this guy was. But as good a player as he was a better guy. And unfortunately, passed away early, like young, 53.
Yeah, 2002.
I was a bit nervous when I first met Ben because I knew who he was. And, I started playing at that golf course in 1990.
At the Nash.
At the National, where he was a pro. And there was lots of, like, really big, good players around there.
Oh, yeah.
David Moreland and Mike Weir's caddy, Brendan Little, played out of there. Sean Foley was working there. So a lot of people, I was a bit intimidated. You know, and I certainly wasn't a very good golfer for that golf course. And Ben helped me a lot with my short game. And then found out I was a broadcaster, and his son was interested in broadcasting.
Oh,
and eventually, his son, Shandy was his name, ended up being an intern on the Humble and Fred show for a year because he was taking a broadcast course. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and so that kind of opened up the door for me and Ben to play a little golf together. He invited me to play some pro-ams with him. And I got to see it up close. And by the time I met him, his golf swing had kind of, you know, it just wasn't, it was a bit erratic, to say the least. But his short game was tour level.
Oh, yeah.
I'd never seen anything before or since up close as good as, like, he was the kind of putter that you, like Ben Crenshaw was. You must have seen it. Like, his putting stroke, it had I only can describe it, this kind of laggy feeling. Like, it was just like, it was so soft.
Oh, yeah. It was like, you know, like the cliche, it was like butter.
Yeah.
And he was a right hand, if I recall correctly, right hand dominant. And so, but that right hand just had this lovely little hinging action.
Yes.
As it went back, and then it just released through the ball. And his left arm, it was like it wasn't even there.
Yeah.
It just kind of went just nicely through it. And as you said, it had that Crenshaw type of flow to it. And just that was kind of his personality, too. He was just a very soft-spoken man. He chose his words carefully. He spoke in kind of a quiet, unhurried way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really fortunate to get to know him as a writer. So we did a number of projects together. But we didn't actually write a book together. We wrote program for Future Links.
Right.
So the Royal Canadian Golf Association, as it was known then, now it's Golf Canada, engaged us. So he designed the program. I was kind of like Boswell writing it down. But I just remember just often sitting with him and he'd just talk about some things about playing the game. And quite honestly, man, I can't deny this. I'd sit there and go like, how fucking lucky am I to sit here and just absorb this man's wisdom and just to be able to learn from it. Like, I learned so much cool stuff from him.
Well, I hope you didn't swear like that in front of Ben Curran. So I met Ben in 1990, and I struggled for many years at the National. And somewhere in the mid 90s, I started struggling less. Ben left to go work at another golf course called the Devil's Pulpit. And I'm not sure if I've told this story very quickly. I won a week after I'd won the club championship in August of 1997, I got a letter.
At the National list.
Yes.
You didn't mention that part. Yeah.
Well, I was still at the National. So okay. I'm hoping that would be assumed. So, and I'm still getting over usually you save your swearing till later in the show.
Did I throw you off?
A little thrown off. I received a letter from Ben Curran. I still have it somewhere, where he made a note of how he was so happy for me, and it talked about how he admired the fact that I persevered through being a complete fucking maniac, you know, because almost like everyone knows I was a bad dude as far as my behavior on the golf course. Most of it happened between 1990 and 1996. Like, I was making the kids laugh there. We're getting to a point, which is I hosted the Ben Curran Invitational this week. But a lot of I made a couple guys laugh because we were on the third hole at the National, and I said to one of the guys in our group, Ted McIntyre, buddy of yours, I said, you see that pond? I said, I've got at least 6 wedges in that pond. At the bottom of that, if we went in there right now, there's like a 1993 Cleveland Gap wedge. Anyway, so Ben sent me this nice note saying, you know, I appreciate you persevered through some challenges. And he's that kind of guy. Anyway, it sucks that he died. And for years now, they've been hosting a tournament in his name called the Curran. And the format is, it's a 2-day pro-am. The first day is sort of Canadian Tour pros and alumni, guys that have been, were pros at the National. Good, good players. And then the, that's the Sunday. Then the Monday is some name players, guys from the States and bigger name Canadian. Jim Rutledge was there. I talked to him.
Oh, yeah.
Brad Fritch was there, former tour player.
Yeah.
And people pay a lot of money to play in the 2 days. And it's one of those, you know, one of those events you read about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of rich guys sitting around being rich guys, you know. In for the event, they raised $1.1 million.
Wow. Holy cow.
There was a point I hosted. So I hosted the evening. Their Monday night or Sunday night was more casual. I just made some announcements. People didn't sit down. There was sort of a food station thing. And then on the Monday, it was a very formal. Everyone's sitting down, jackets and ties for the most part. And at one point, I was doing all the announcements, and I was doing some bullshit. And then in between courses, I was hosting the live auction. So I'd get up there and try and auction off some items. So at one point, the chairman of the club is up with me, and we're talking about where we're at in terms of money to be raised. And at that point, they'd only raised $980,000. And when he said that, he said, "So guys, like, we want to get it over a million." And before he even finished the sentence, there was a guy about 20 feet from me. He just went, "I'll throw in 20 grand right now." I was like, "What?" And then his friend says, "So will I." And I'm like, "What the fuck just happened?" Like, they said they'll throw in 40 grand. Like, you and I would be like, "I've got some Canadian Tire money." Like, it was so casual. I found that it was frightening.
I'll empty the jar of change on my dresser.
Like, I said to somebody else, if I was to try and access 20 grand, I'd have to call somebody.
I know, and I always find it's amazing what IPAs and very good Chablis or whatever kind of red wine you want to mention, how these things really help raise money.
Oh yeah, but yeah, of course you do. But you know, it's the kind of crowd where the guy threw out $20,000 like it was nothing. So that was, I can tell you, I got a couple cool stories for you. But the golf course is, and we were talking about this before the show, it's hard to relate. Even if you're if you've never played a course with greens that fast and a golf course that difficult, the golf course slopes from the back tees something like 156. Course rating is 75 or 6. From the tees we played, we were playing it longer than I thought they were going to. It slopes 148, 145. Course rating is like 74 point something. And I was playing on Sunday. I played with your friend Ted McIntyre, very nice man. Myself, Chris Dew, and Chris is the superintendent of the National Golf Club and has been, I've known him forever. So when somebody, you know, guys love to bullshit about a lot of stuff, but one of the things that guys love to bullshit about is how fast the greens are. And they're always like, "Oh yeah, man, it was running like 14. I'm like, "No, it wasn't. It was running, you know." So when I tell you they were running 12-7, I'm telling you that because the guy that rolled them was my partner. So the first day I played, I only played Sunday, and Monday I just went there and hung around and hosted the thing. But I had some good shots. I was on the golf course for 90 minutes before I made my first par. I don't play a lot. I mean, listen, I'm a decent golfer. I don't play a lot of rounds of golf where an hour and a half or an hour 45 goes by and I've yet to make a par. I did hit many greens in regulation. By the time I made my first par, I'd probably hit 4 of the first 6 holes in regulation, including the first hole, and 3-putted all of them.
Did you knock it like miles by or the slope? You missed the hole low and it rolled forever.
It's just so hard to describe. I'd had hit some good shots. I got up and down a couple times for bogeys. Those were the only putts I sank. I 3-putted 6 of the 18 holes. It's just hard to describe. Like, I've played fast greens. I've played that golf course with fast greens, but it was they weren't long putts. They were some 30 footers, 35 footers. I just couldn't keep from going 10 feet past the hole. So that was my experience. I had a great time, lots of fun. I'm going to give you the scores now. Before I tell you about, I'm going to give you some scores from guys that have won major championships. Mark Calcavecchia won the Open Championship. Clara Jugg, National Golf Club of Canada, shoots 84. Skip Kendall, great guy. Skip Kendall, great guy. Spent a couple days talking to Skip. 30 years on the PGA Tour. Saw him on Monday. How did your day go? He goes, I thought I played great. I said, what'd you shoot? He goes, 80. Fucking 80? He said, I thought I played great. I could go down the list of guys like Brett Quigley. There's a Canadian named Mike Gligic. Sorry, I was getting his name wrong.
Yes, Mike Gligic, yeah.
Plays on the PGA Tour, has had some status the last 2 or 3 years. 86.
We actually had him on the show about 5 years ago.
Right, great kid. I've played with him. He shoots 86.
Wow.
I don't think Mike Gligic has shot 86 since he was 12.
That's right.
There was some good scores. The winning score, I think, was Tom Pernice. Great golf swing. Tom Pernice, Chris DeMarco, I think they were 71 or 72. And three-time major champion Ernie Els was 74. A couple local guys, Eddie Maunder, who is a great local guy that plays a lot of local PGA events, shot 77. I said, man, that's even par out here.
Yeah.
So let me just put a pin in this for a second. You know, Skip Kendall, I had a chance to talk to him. Really nice, really interesting character. Teaches golf now. But I watched him do a clinic with another teaching pro named Brian Mogg. You see Brian Mogg on the Golf Channel all the time.
Yeah, he's a former Ledbetter guy.
Absolutely. So here's what Skip Kendall told. I'm going to tell you the story that he was told that happened to him when he first started on tour. And this is a swing thoughts learning moment. Attention. So he's playing with Fuzzy Zeller, one of his first tournaments, and they're waiting on, they're about 11 holes in, and he's pretty intimidated. He's playing with Fuzzy Zeller. And Fuzzy said, you know, they started talking about how to be successful on the PGA Tour. And Fuzzy said, you know what, kid? If you're too careful out here, you're never going to last more than a year. And Skip said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, a lot of guys come out here and they try and play perfectly and they won't take any risks and they're never. And when I wrote it down, as soon as he said it, I wrote it down. He said, what Fuzzy said to him was, don't be afraid to take the shot. It's kind of like what Rotella, and we've been talking about this last month, about turning it loose. Mm-hmm. And what Skip said to us at the clinic was, what he means is, hey, listen, you know, you got a shot, not a crazy risk shot, but you have a shot, you know, maybe it's over water or whatever. Just take the shot, because Fuzzy said, what's the worst that can happen? It goes in the water, it goes out of bounds. Like, but for us amateurs, it's like, you know, why are we so afraid to just let it go? What's the worst? You know, like we've said it. You can steer the ball and hit lots of shitty shots, or you know, you can roast or take a good swing at it and still hit a shitty shot, but at least you've not done it carefully. Thoughts, comments, concerns?
Love it. It's right on the theme that we examined last show about the Mazin Cassis. It's just hitting shots, see what happens, give it your best. It's what's really interesting for most golfers, and this is kind of the background when I used to say that our mantra for the University of Guelph golf team is, I slightly don't care. And because the problem is that we care too much. Like, oh, is this going to turn out? Am I going to get it on the green? Is it going to go in the water? Am I going to fail the test, as we've been talking about? And so when I slightly don't care, yeah, I want good things to happen. But you know what? As you said, you're not going to die if it goes in the water or whatever happens. You know, what's the worst thing that can happen? Oh, you hit a shot that wasn't that great. Really, it's not all that. And you can come back from that stuff. You know, particularly on a par five, you can dunk in the water, make a bogey. That's fine. You can get over that. So it's just coming in things with a greater degree of, shall we say, lightness. And to me, that comes back to the thing we've talked about ad infinitum, things we've talked about on this show before, is awareness. And having the awareness that, oh, I'm tight, I'm thinking about this too much, and just having the awareness, you know, it's just a golf shot. Let's take a shot, do our best, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, and I really took that, I really loved that idea of don't be afraid to take the shot. Now, again, at their level, that might mean, you know, trying a shot to a riskier shot than the average amateur. But I think for all of us that aren't professionals, being afraid is the death move of golf. Being afraid 100%. All the time. And what exactly are we being afraid? What are we fearing? Well, I think, you know, we being amateur psychologists, we fear, what does a bad shot say about me?
Exactly.
So I'll tell you a quick story, if I can. Well, two. I'll give you the Chris DeMarco story in a minute. But I was really lucky because I went there the second day in the afternoon, spent a couple hours just walking around, saw DeMarco tee off, talked to him a little bit, more about him later. And then, as luck would have it, my friend, a guy that I was friends with from 1990 to now, who's a very good player, who won the club championship there five times. And I played a lot of golf with this guy. He's about 63, and he's a very, very good golfer. But he was in Ernie's group. So my friend Jamie introduces me to Ernie. It's my friend Howard. He's hosting this thing. And also, he won the club championship. So Ernie's like, oh, that's cool, you know. So I'm like walking around with Ernie for six holes. Not in the gallery. Like, I'm on the tee, just shooting this shit with him. After one tee shot, there was no one around. As we were walking back to the carts, I had a question for him, and he stops in the middle of like the tee walkway and takes his driver and goes, because I asked him about weight pressure with a driver, and he's like showing me, like just him and I.
Cool.
Like, it couldn't have been cooler. And then I said to him, I said, my second question is, I said, I noticed that your stance is a little bit narrower. And he said in his South African, yeah, man, the older I get, the narrower my stance gets. And I laughed. I said, me too. And he said, yeah, because it's easier to turn. And then again, then he shows me, he says, this was my stance when I was younger. Like, again, I'm sort of like, this is crazy. I'm just getting to hang out with this guy. And I watched him hit really, really high level golf shots for six holes. And on the last hole that I watched him, because I had to go and get changed, he blocked this shot so far off the golf course, they never found the ball. They were never going to find the ball. But it was so bad, it made him laugh. That's how bad a shot it was. And of all the shots I saw him hit, that I don't know why that impressed me, but his reaction impressed me. It was like, what the fuck do I care? I've got three majors. What do I care if I block a shot here at this, you know, in front of these dopes? Then he puts another ball down because he looks around and he goes, we're all like, no, you're never going to find that. And he gets, it's the 16th hole at the National. He hits another ball, rips it down the middle. I leave and I found out later that he gets the next shot on the green and makes a birdie or a bogey with his second ball.
Oh, wow.
But it was his reaction that I thought was really cool. And I just like,
I was just going to say that's right in line with what people always thought about Ernie Els, you know, the big easy, you know, has ice in his veins, that kind of thing, which is all bullshit, but he's just like anybody else. But he just is able, he just, part of his, he had just had this grit and this ability just to keep things together. Remember when he opened up the Masters with,
four-putted or something. No, that was wrong.
Oh, I think it was a five or six putt.
Rahm's the one that four-putted at that U.S. Open. Yeah. Somebody asked me, they said, did you ask him about the time he six-putted? And I looked at him and went, No.
Hey, Ernie, can I ask you another question? Remember that time he six-putted?
I did not, sir. So part of my job was to auction off items, as I said. So at one point in the evening, there's like a couple hundred people in the room, 250 maybe. I'm sitting at a table with the pros at the Nash and the general manager. And Chris DeMarco comes up to me and he said, hey, I just want to talk to you for a second. So he brings me over and a bunch of the pros had signed some flags from the 18th hole, and it's got the 50th anniversary logo on it, and all the pros there, Cal Kvecchia, Skip Kendall, Mogg, all these guys, signed the flag. And he said, here's what we're going to do. Can you auction this off? I said, well, can you come up and do it with me? He goes, yeah, absolutely. He said, but don't tell anyone. We've also signed a second one so that if we get some bidding going between two guys, we'll at some point we'll sell two flags to them. So sure enough, we did that. And some guys are bidding $1,000, $2,000. So we get to $4,000 for this flag. And I say, sold. And then I said, and you, sir, are... to the other guy that was at 4,000 or close to it. And I said, and you've also got one. And everyone freaks out. And so that was $8,000 for two flags. And then later in the evening, he tells me that somebody anonymously had bought another flag for, so it's 12 grand for three flags. This is the kind of money that's in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
So DeMarco, great guy. So I bring him up to help me auction off these flags. And I said, hey, do you mind if I get in? I did this with Rocco last year. So I say to him in front of everyone, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions? I said, everyone wants to know, because I said, you were a high-level player right in the peak of Tiger Woods, at his height of his greatness. Just tell us a little bit about competing against him. And he was very articulate, talked about how Tiger was just, you know, his focus. And he talked about how Tiger could just do everything better than all of us. And then I said, because I remembered this. I said, you played in the 2005 Masters with Tiger Woods. In fact, you were leading that tournament well into the back nine on Sunday. So for everyone, I said, for context, I said, everyone, you know that famous chip where Tiger's ball just stood on the lip for a second and then went in? I said, Chris DeMarco was on the green when that happened. And I have the microphone in my hand, and I'm sort of holding it for him. And I said, what was your reaction just before it went in? And he goes like this. He goes, he was trying to, and the fucking place went crazy because he was trying to blow the ball out of the hole.
And I
said to myself after, I go, he's told that story before, because it was just
for sure.
It was so perfect the way I set him up, though. And he says, yeah. Anyway, like he was on that 16th green. He described it. It was fantastic. So that was that. And then he talked about how basically Tiger bogeyed the next two holes. And Chris DeMarco was in a playoff with Tiger Woods to win the Masters. So that was very cool for a golf nerd like me, and it really did add a lot to the evening, and everyone enjoyed it. And anyway, so that's it. That was my experience.
Oh, that's so cool to not only to witness players like that, you know, as you say, to be able to walk along with Ernie Els and watch what went on. And just I want to say something to come back to you. One of the things about DeMarco is that I think that experience at the Masters, that might have his time as a competitive player quickly came to an end, if I recall. And then he ended up being a Golf Channel guy. He was on the Morning Drive show, and he was excellent. He was so good in that role. But anyway, I just wanted to note that. But before we started recording today, you were mentioning what it was like to watch Ernie, Chris, in terms of how they sort of took care of their business, like ball position and how important that is. So, yeah, what did you notice?
Well, I said to you, you know, because you also help people with their golf swings. You're a golf coach of, you do it all. You do it all, my friend. What those guys are really, really good at is their fundamentals. Like, I watched DeMarco. I've got some video of him teeing off on 10 at the Nash and a couple other swings. I've got Ernie, same thing. And what you notice about every time they hit a golf ball, you know, obviously their grips are great, but their ball position, their alignment, their posture, and their aim is just always good. And as I said to you, you know, and you've noticed this, I'm sure, a lot of times people think that better golfers have unlocked some mystery that they don't have access to.
The secret.
But what the secret really is the better player you play with, the better their fundamentals are. And those guys in particular, and I watched other guys warm up, and you know, you're what people get distracted by is how they swing the club. But pay attention to how they set up to it, because that's, as I called it, there are some non-negotiable fundamentals that those guys do just so well. Like, it was, you know, you could see, I watched Ernie play six holes. Every time he sets up, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, it's so how I summarize that is they have a process.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it a creative process as opposed to routine, because to me, routine is doing something without thinking. But that process is what pushes you forward in golf, is because you become more aware of what you're doing and when you're not doing it. But just to come back to the fundamentals, alignment. I remember playing with you years ago, and like, it was kind of like, hey, Timmy, I see you want to go down this fairway, but you're aligned into the farmer's field.
That's right.
And just getting a sense around that. And so, you know, when I'm coaching people on their swings, it's just one of the very first things, if you got like an intermediate player, one of the very first things I always notice is alignment. So we'll get the alignment sticks down, and I'll say, okay, just hold, you know, go to hit a shot, and then just when you're ready to launch it, just hold. Okay, I put a alignment stick down behind the ball, one behind their heels, step back. And almost 90% of the time, they're misaligned. And the struggle is that, so let's say you covered that, talk about the importance of it, its effect on club path and all that good stuff. People come back the next week and be like, so what am I doing with my swing? Okay, let's see. And then you look at the alignment and they're still off. And because they haven't dialed into the importance of process. And that is just a fundamental of getting good at golf, is taking care of your fundamentals. And so, dear listeners, we've said it how many gazillions of times, there's no shortcuts, there is no secrets. When you take care of your fundamentals through a process, you start to build skill.
Well, I think part of the reason people avoid it is it's boring. It's tedious.
It's boring, yes, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, you know, I know you sort of noted in the article, I have a process, and sometimes people mock it, but that's fine. I mean, even at the National on Sunday, they had parked our carts kind of away from where everyone else was. So I went over to get my clubs, but I kind of went behind the cart and I did all my stretching, and I got my band that I use nowadays. And I looked down, you know, I was the only amateur that had an alignment stick on the ground, but a couple other pros did. David Moreland did. You know, and I really rarely hit a golf ball where there's not some kind of cue for my aiming, because, you know, sometimes, and that's the kind of thing that gets away from you. And you said mm-hmm. it perfectly. People go from week to week and go, oh, there's something going on with my swing. And as I said to you before the show, whenever I start hitting a couple of the same type of bad shots in a row, I don't think about my golf swing. As I said, it's not like I forgot how to swing. But it's usually right. Something like my aiming is a bit off, or my ball position is a bit off, because everything else is kind of, my posture isn't going to change that much. But, and I would say to the listeners, as an addendum to what you said, like, before you look at your golf swing, look at where the ball is and look at where you're aimed, because that really can screw you up. To your point, by the way, after 2005, he back to DeMarco. I'm just looking up here. He was number 9 in the world in the time of Tiger Woods. Chris DeMarco was in the top 10 in the world rankings for a couple of years, but he had some shoulder surgery and chronic shoulder trouble.
You're right. Yep.
And basically, after 2007, stopped playing regularly. His last regular year was 2012, and I don't think he's played a lot on the Champions Tour. But a great guy. Well, there you have it. It was so great having our guest, TJ Attlee, or whatever her name was. What was her name? What's her name? TJ Attlee?
TJ Attlee. Yeah. She'll be, we'll get that arranged. I just want to say, just before we sign off,
yes,
on our last official show of the key season, I thought, what a classy move by those guys at the Kern event. With the signing of the flags. I mean, that shows you how much they're in it for fun. Yeah, they're making money, but they're also, they're aware of the good things that events like that can do and raising money. And so for them to think of signing the flag surreptitiously and all that, that's just a class act.
Yeah, I agree.
That's part of the thing I like about golf, is that guys will think like that.
Yeah, I think, and there's no doubt. I was trying to get my head around how much everyone's being paid. Because, they're not coming up there for free. Boo Weekly was there.
Oh, wow.
Now, there were some guys there. There's some names that, some Champions Tour guys that I didn't know. A guy named Tom Perrell. But they're not, so they, let's say the average guy was making 10, 15, or 20, and Ernie was making 50 or 75. Ernie Els doesn't need any money. Well, part of it is somebody, he has to know somebody. There's some people there that are members at courses in Florida. So I know he got invited because he knows one of the main sponsors of the place.
He's doing a favor. Maybe he's going to stay at their house.
Absolutely. He's doing a favor for somebody because he doesn't need whatever they were paying him. He didn't need it. Boo Weekly, though, looked like he needed it. So, he definitely looked like he could use his 15 large. But yeah,
some of these guys who, kind of had a, like a Boo Weekly, kind of had a cup of coffee on the PGA Tour. And yeah, he had a personality and everything. Yeah. They kind of remind me of a band in the 1970s that had a number one hit. And then every once in a while, they got trotted out into some kind of festival or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Please, put your hands together for epic recording.
No, absolutely.
And you remember, they do... they do a bunch of songs. No one knows what they are. They'll do a couple of covers, and then they'll do their number one hit.
That's right.
Thank you. Good night.
Let me just check and see what Mr. Boo Shaw shot. Where is it here? Hang on. What did Boo Weekly shoot? Oh, yeah, here it is. 78. Nice score.
Yeah.
What do you think? Gene Sowers, by the way, was there as well. Gene Sowers shot 75.
Yeah, Gene Sowers is a smaller guy, but he was... He reminded me of Fred Funk. He's one of those guys who always hit it in the fairway.
Yep.
Always, always. Jeez, we're old talking about all these old guys.
Well, those were the guys there. I mean, that's, they weren't getting any current tour players.
Yeah, the guys who had like, 20 grand in their glove compartment.
Yeah, exactly. Should I tell you so I get up and do about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 8 minutes off the top of the evening and welcoming everybody, giving them the agenda.
Kind of doing your stand-up thing?
Well, I did do a little bit. I sort of snuck it in. So how I snuck it in was I sort of give everyone the agenda for the evening and welcome and, what a great day. Everyone applauds. And then I got a little bit serious talking about the legacy of Ben Kern and how I knew him a little bit. Like I talked about, who he was to me and how kind he was. I talked about the letter he sent me. And then, because they didn't, sure, the guys that know me there know that I'm a comic, but I think most of the people in the crowd just have a vague awareness of me. So, after the Ben Kern part, then I started talking about, what a great day we had, and then I said, I think we're all, I can speak for everyone here, how grateful we are to be at a golf club like this on such a beautiful day and in such great shape, and how, we're here to raise money for prostate cancer, Princess Margaret and Sunnybrook. And I'm sort of talking like this. And I said, and the fact that we have our health. And then I said something about, and I think we can all be grateful for how, great the staff did, and they applaud. And I go, and I think I just want to say this. I'm just grateful to be in, one of the greatest countries in the world. And that gets a big applaud. Then that, when that dies down, I say, now the reason I say one of is because we have some Americans in the room. And then I pause. Well, by the way, Americans, just be careful because our beer has alcohol in it, which is an old joke I've done. So that got a little laugh because I did that because I wanted them to sort of go, oh, he's making a joke. I did that on purpose. And I said, listen, I'm not going to stand up here and do a whole bunch of stuff about the differences between Americans and Canadians. I said, but for me, my experience has been, one of the big differences is it's a shoes on, shoes off thing. And everyone kind of looks at me. I go, for instance, in Canada, you go to somebody's house, you take your shoes off. In the States, when you go to somebody's house, they shoot you in the face. And that gets this. First of all, people pause for a second, and then they fucking laugh their head off. And I go, sorry, Boo Weekly. I know you got caught trying to bring your rifle through the border. Anyway, but that was sort of my last little thing. But yeah, it's a joke I've been doing for a long time about Americans have fucking killed. Anyway, that's what we call misdirection, Tim.
Love that. Love that. See, you've just, see, that's why you're the GSL. You enlighten us.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, thanks to TaylorMade for the whole season, man.
Yes.
It's been great.
And Oscar Bravo.
Oscar Bravo, yeah. And SecretLinks.golf. But I'll tell you, I don't know what's going to happen for, I know we'll be back. We're not going to, we're not dying. We're just not going to be on every week as of the first week of September. But I know we'll be back doing this show in 2025 for our 10th anniversary.
Hmm.
And fingers crossed, we'll be back with TaylorMade.
Do I have to buy you a ring or anything?
Yeah, what, I don't know. Maybe so I'm going to get you a T-shirt and it's going to say, O'Connor says, fuck a lot. I'm Tim O'Connor and I say fuck for breakfast. All right, Tim O'Connor, O'ConnorGolf.ca. And of course, this program is produced by the Humble and Fred Radio Network. All rights copyrighted, explicit, you know, that kind of thing.
Don't steal it, you'll be shot.
That's right. All rights and copyright infringement bullshit. And we'll see you next week. No, 2 weeks. Dixie, double fall time. You feel all right when you hear the music.